Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners.
Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
Delta 2 Yankee, Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Are you up for it?
Hello and welcome. This is Radio X Frankfurt am Main with Radiator X, our special international format, produced in cooperation with Radia.fm Art Radio Network. On the mic, Miss Gunst, today proudly presenting History Exhaustion, a piece contributed by Francis Hunger. Three friends search for an ominous radio station that transmits number sequences with mysterious messages. Told is the expedition story through an area bearing names such as Path of the Invisible Hand, Stalin Highlands, Postmodernist Cave Labyrinth. The characters, student, entrepreneur, skilled worker, lose their life, or at least get lost, under unpleasant circumstances. Further information on this show, as well as the credits, can be found online at www.gunst.info/radiator and at www.radia.fm.
Hey, folks.
Mike Radar Hotel, Lufthansa 712, approach level 352. Flight level 350, flight level 350.
Good evening, Radar Asia, now flight to you, level 350, break book 2.
Level 330.
China 22.
Confirm, calling here, China 22.
Thank you.
historian. The hiking trip was an annual fixture for the three friends, except in times of war. The first was an unemployed metal worker, the second a student of sociology, the third an entrepreneur who was now a successful communications services provider after his first company had gone bankrupt. They'd been friends since their school days. Their previous hikes had gone generally smoothly because they'd stuck to the known paths. I assume that they set out on their last hike with the intention of penetrating the unknown territory, a plan that produced disastrous results. Narrator: the metal worker possessed a world receiver he would often switch on for amusement. He would search the waves for interesting stations that, accompanied by loud hissing, gave him the feeling of participating in the world. Historian: it was the metal worker who kept urging his friends to enter the unknown territory. His world receiver had picked up a series of interesting shortwave signals that could originate only from that area. At least, that is what is suggested by the column of digits in a notebook he had started. There is no evidence, however, that he succeeded in deciphering the columns of figures. Narrator: the trio's last hike began on the path of the invisible hand. They started discussing their destination. Out of consideration for their companion, the metalworker and the entrepreneur tried to not get too agitated. As they progressed, they found their path increasingly strewn with boulders. "Let's stop for a break at the Hill of Social Democracy," suggested the metalworker. "It's too early for a rest," his companions countered. "Look what's looming up in the distance," the entrepreneur exclaimed in an amused tone of voice. "The high ground of real socialism, stripped bare of all its trees." His hiking companions fell sheepishly silent and trudged on all the more doggedly. Clouds were gathering overhead. It began to snow and the entrepreneur lost one of his gloves. Historian: after the comparatively wooded Hill of Social Democracy, there comes the increasingly barren terrain of the slopes leading up to the higher ground of real socialism. A farmer at the bottom of the Hill of Social Democracy was the last to see the threesome alive. Narrator: as the debates became more heated, they began to lose sight of their actual destination, the unknown territory, because each of them was suggesting they take a different direction. The first accident occurred after they passed the cave labyrinth of postmodernism. Historian: some years later, an expedition heading towards the unknown territory found the corpse of the student in the gorge of foreshortened critic of capitalism. She had apparently fallen over the edge. Narrator: to her left there was a rock face. To her right a deep ravine cut through the stone. A narrow, slightly steep path wound its way down the side of the mountain. The student was walking behind her companions. All three of them were silent. The metal worker, watching the entrepreneur's rucksack bobbing in front of him in time with its owner's steps, heard a crunching sound behind him. He turned around slowly, careful not to lose his balance. The spot behind him where the student's hiking boots should have been was empty. The entrepreneur, who had wrapped a scarf around his left hand to protect it from the cold, turned round likewise. The two men began to argue over who was to blame for the accident. "We should have kept a closer eye on her," the metal worker said. The entrepreneur didn't reply. The student should have read more closely the information about the terrain, he thought to himself, and their plan to penetrate the unknown territory was pointless in any case. "I'm going to head back towards the massif of capitalism," he resolved. "It's better that way." Historian: when I spoke to the entrepreneur's widow, she confirmed that her husband was very familiar with the massif of capitalism. He had been a regular visitor to the area over 10 years and possessed excellent maps, although this time he hadn't taken them along. I'll take the liberty of pointing out that the spot where he died only recently received an official name. Until then, the locals simply referred to it as a precipice. A rope party climbing down the precipice of the crisis of overproduction, as it is known today, discovered his corpse there, but nobody could salvage the body because they were all suffering from fatigue. Narrator: shortly after the death of the sociology student, the unemployed metalworker separated from the entrepreneur. Their parting words were unpleasant and reproachful in tone. Neither was willing to meet the other halfway. The worker thought to himself, nothing like this happened on our hikes before. It would be madness to press forward alone. How did things reach this pass? Whenever he stopped walking, he felt the cold. It was necessary to stay on the move. The metal worker decided to stick to the original plan and keep walking into the unknown territory. I wish I'd taken my receiver, he thought. He looked inside his rucksack and checked his provisions. Then he set off. Historian: no trace of the metal worker has ever been found. It is assumed that he entered the unknown territory, but there is no evidence to support this claim. It may be the case that he was partially responsible for the deaths of his companions, and chose not to return for that reason.
Pour nous accorder cette interview dans ce très beau bâtiment Lyon. Donc d'abord on va parler du thème de l'exposition universelle et le pavillon de Saint-Pourcien. Comment voyez-vous le thème meilleure ville, meilleure vie?
L'énergie nucléaire pacifique. Il est à noter que la conférence...
Primera Guerra Mondiale, en 1918, al estallar la Segunda Guerra Mundiale...
...un grave de patria de un pedici a certi.
Wir sind sicher bevölkern, dass vorübergehende Aufstellung in vielen Regionen im Laufe des Tages. In Regen im Nordwesten und später am Tag und in der Nacht, auch in anderen Teilen des Landes. Die Temperatur in der Nacht zwischen 5 und 10 Grad
Celsius. È lui che deve fare tutti i giorni, tutti quelli che non conoscono ancora Dio, hanno questa forma di fare un'esperienza dell'amore del mondo. E lui ha fatto questa forma di
There's been a law here from ancient times that if anyone's taken sick on such a journey into the valley's depths, he must be hurled, which means instant death. But the same custom prescribes that the one with the sickness be asked, should we turn back again for that reason. And moreover, the custom says that the sick man must reply, no, we should not turn back. Bertolt Brecht, Der Jahrsager.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm. Over and out.